What? What? What?
I know how we can run everybody out of Rock Ridge.
How?
We'll kill the firstborn male child in every household.
Too Jewish.
Shalom, and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Too Jewish is Rabbi Benji Levine of Gesher, the organization that unites Jews in Israel across all cultural and religious lines. We'll also have a visit from our Too Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our Mavina on Israel, Oshrat Barel. Please email your comments to us at TooJewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at TooJewishRadio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. It's the final Too Jewish show of this secular year, the conclusion of another year of everything Jewish and fit to broadcast. Actually, it seems slightly wrong to say Happy New Year this time of year. Certainly not L'Shana Tova. It's not a Jewish New Year, after all. But I'm reminded of John Stewart's comment about New Year's. He notes that he likes to go to Times Square on Rosh Hashanah instead, since it's much less crowded in September than it is on December 31st. Anyway, 2014 has been an interesting year for Jews, which has pretty much been true every single year for about 3,800 of them. And since this is the show and we do our best and worst recap of the past 12 months, we get to do that all over again at Rosh Hashanah, of course, it makes it easy to prep for this particular edition of Too Jewish. Never work too hard when you don't have to, I always say. Actually, that's not a very Jewish way to do things. One thing we Jews are not usually accused of is being slackers. If effort equates to virtue, Jews typically shine in this area like Hanukkah candles, and that's true every year. But you know, this past secular year, effort was not always enough.
This little song is not the typical tarantella. This little song about a particular kind of fella. No look of the same, or talk of the same, or dress of the same, or pray the same as we do. So we call him a name and make up a game. The name of the game is blame.
Blame of the Jew.
And Jews like a minor key. If you're down in your luck, your life will suck. Then tell me, what do you got to lose?
Blame of the Jews.
If your boss drives you nuts, if your landlord is a putz, the fault is whose?
Blame of the Jews!
2014 was a challenging year for Jews in many respects. It's been called the year of Blame the Jews, which does not exactly make it unique in human history, of course, but there really did seem to be a special effort these last 12 months to focus negative attention on us, or at least on the members of the tribe. The Gaza War in Israel was caused by a relentless terror campaign of rockets and mortars fired by Hamas Palestinian terrorists into Israel, and then the kidnapping and murder of Israeli teenagers by Hamas terrorists in June. But Israel was blamed all around the world for responding. And anti-Semitic acts, particularly in Europe, rose to a pitch we haven't really seen for decades, especially in countries like France and Belgium. Even in America, anti-Gaza war protests featured inflammatory anti-Semitic rhetoric and visuals, very disturbing ones. All of which makes us wonder just a little bit about what 2015 has in store for us. But the one thing Jewish history teaches is never to fully let our guard down. And with ISIS on the move in the Middle East and lots of anti-Israel and anti-Jewish noise over the internet and in the other media, there is certainly reason to remain alert, which should make us grateful for the fact that the United States remains a strong bastion of support for Israel and a remarkably good place for Jews to live, work, and contribute to society. Without being too jingoistic, it's difficult to think of a better or safer place for Jews to be Jewish than 2015 America. The temptation to assimilate is still very strong. And in a society with so many delicious distractions, it's easy to ignore our own faith and heritage. Still, the opportunity to be Jewish freely, creatively, and openly has never been more evident than it is today, right here. Speaking of identity, we have just concluded the great festival of identity and religious freedom, and although Hanukkah is slightly past, there were some really great new Hanukkah songs, or at least Hanukkah parodies, this year. We didn't have time to get them all in previous two Jewish shows on and before Hanukkah, so here's a slightly late one. This next tune was new this year, celebrating Sufganiyot, the jelly donuts they ate in Israel to celebrate the miracle of oil, fried and otherwise, by A.K.A. Pella. Get it? Aka Pella?
Oh, my Sufganiyot, it is the food I love the most. Each bite tastes bitte apon. Oh, oh. Make them a frying dough. Turn them over, cook on low. This donut is made to chew. Just eat all my Sufganiyot.
Oh, I'm starving, baby. If it was just another grocery item on the shelf, I wouldn't need them playing dreidel for a load of gel. And why do rockers get all the love? That's whack. If I dip my donuts in applesauce, could you handle that? Furthermore, I apologize for any heart attacks. It's just the last oil strangely kept on coming back. I used to use one jug for the whole batch. I kept on flowing like the story from our ancient past. There's only one food that could ever make us understand the lack of oil in the Kohanim and Hada Man. But because one jug kept burning for 8 days, we Jews, we commemorate with 8 days worth of oily food.
Oh, my Sufganiyot.
That was Sufganiyot for Hanukkah in parody of Stereo Hearts by Adam Levine with Gym Class Heroes. Tasty. While Hanukkah is now past, the calories consumed linger on. While the old year winds down, I am personally now in the process of preparing for a sabbatical trip of my own that will start in just a couple of weeks. It will include a journey to most of the holiest places on earth. I am working on writing a book about them, exploring what makes them holy and whether they retain that holiness intrinsically, or if it is solely created by the people who build the places, maintain them, and make pilgrimages there to affirm their holiness. I'll be traveling to many countries and exploring each of their holiest sites. The places I'll visit range from Stonehenge in Canterbury in England to Lourdes in France, Santiago de Compostela in Spain, St. Peter's in Rome, Auschwitz-Birkenau in Poland, where I'll be for the 70th anniversary of the liberation of that gigantic camp. I'll go on to Mount Olympus in Greece, to Istanbul and Göbekli Tepe in Turkey, Luxor and Mount Sinai in Egypt, in Israel, Jerusalem, Haifa, Bethlehem, Nazareth, and many other places, Amritsar, Dharamsala, Varanasi, and Bodh Gaya in India, Kyoto, Japan, Borobudur and Bali in Indonesia, Chiang Mai in Thailand, Angkor Wat in Cambodia, the Batu Caves in Malaysia, Ayers Rock in Australia, Easter Island in Chile, and Machu Picchu, Peru. In each country, 19 of them in all, I will have the opportunity to visit the holiest places and seek to discover what makes them holy and what holiness consists of in each venue. It's a pretty ambitious itinerary, and while I love to travel, this will be a bit beyond anything I've done before. But I'm excited about the chance to see and experience so much, the opportunity to try to find out what makes for holiness in our world, and what I might learn about it along the way. While I'm away for about 3 months, Two Jewish will still be here every Sunday to continue to entertain, inform, challenge, and, God willing, interest you with our patented blend of meaningful Jewish radio excellence. We are preparing for this trip by putting together shows for every Sunday morning at 9 a.m., as we have for 12 and a half years now. I'm not sure I'll be able to send in reports from all of my various stops around the world, but I'm sure you'll be able to hear Two Jewish every week while I'm away, and by podcast wherever you are, from iTunes or from our TwoJewishRadio.com website. So, don't worry. As we say in Temple, the shul must go on, and so will the radio show. We have guests lined up, mavens coming in, and lots of great music, comedy, and provocative Jewish thoughts ready to broadcast throughout this time. And Rabbi Batsheva Appel and Rabbi Sandy Seltzer will bring you the weekly news fresh every week They'll start doing it in mid-January. You're stuck with me till then. Enjoy. Israeli society is incredibly diverse, made up of deeply religious, determinedly secular, and every variety of both conceivable groups. It takes a unique organization, and especially a talented and unique individual, to bridge those divides and work to create understanding and harmony. Find out about Gesher, the best organization doing that work in Israel, from the 2014 Kohan Award winner, Rabbi Benji Levine, when we come back soon on Too Jewish.
My name is John Ben Asher, and I'm the head of school at the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Tucson Hebrew Academy is a pluralistic kindergarten through 8th grade Jewish day school. We foster educational excellence through an interdisciplinary, integrated general studies and Judaic curriculum. We teach our students to apply Jewish values and learning to everyday life, enabling them to make their community and the world a better place. Our engaging, talented faculty ensure a rigorous, interactive, supportive learning environment. From the early years through comprehensive high school prep, children thrive in THA's uniquely enriching educational community and culture. Our 41-year tradition of excellence continues to produce highly skilled, critical, and creative thinking students with a strong moral compass and deep understanding of Jewish identity, traditions, and values, well prepared for the challenges to come. Tucson Hebrew Academy, thaaz.org, 529-3888.
If you like fun and games, you'll love this. And this. And even this. Casino del Sol Resort offers more fun under the sun with the newest slots, the best entertainment, and world-class golf. If you want fun, hit the at Casino del Sol Resort in Tucson. Take I-10 East to I-19 exit Valencia West or visit CasinoDelSolResort.com.
We're out there having fun in that warm Arizona sun.
Enterprise of the Pasquagaki Tribe.
We are delighted to welcome to Too Jewish Rabbi Benjamin Levine. He is a Senior Vice President and Director of Education of the Gesher Organization and a co-winner of the Kohan Memorial Foundation Award for Jewish Unity for the year 2014. Rabbi Levine made Aliyah from the U.S. in 1969 and was ordained by the Chief Rabbi of Israel in 1973. Benji is the grandson of the renowned Tzaddik Rabbi Aryeh Levine and continues to promote the spirit of Ahavat Yisrael, of Klal Yisrael, the unity of Israel, and the love of the people of Israel for one another. He has worked extensively on building bridges, which is kind of what Gesher means, throughout Israel and really throughout the world between Jews of different backgrounds and orientations. Good morning, welcome, and Mazel Tov.
Good morning, thank you. A pleasure to speak to you.
I'd like you to explain a little bit about what Gesher is. It's a pretty well-known organization in Israel, but not so well-known in the United States.
Well, the word Gesher, as you said, means a bridge. And the organization was started after the Six-Day War. It was the early 70s, actually, by a young man who had made Aliyah, Dr. Daniel Tropper, who I've worked together with for many, many, many years. And the idea of Gesher was to try and bridge the gap between various sections of Jews living in Israel. As you know, in America, you can be a Reform Jew, a conservative Jew, an Orthodox Jew, have your own congregation, your own following, and it's not much of a problem. But in Israel, the divide between the religious and secular is a very, very big problem because it's a Jewish country and a Jewish state. And there is a chief rabbi. There are religious parties, which in America you don't have. In America you have, you can be a Republican, Democrat, religious, secular, vote for whoever you want to. But in Israel there are religious parties, and very often in order to form a coalition government, you need some of those religious parties. They may be a minority, but if they're needed for a coalition government, they can issue or help pass laws against maybe a majority in the country. And it's a very, very big problem. It's a problem that in 48, when the country was established, they sat down, many different parties, and said, what kind of an Israel do we want? Is it going to be a religious country, a secular country? And if it is a religious country, what does that mean? What does a secular country mean? What kind of culture is the country going to have? Are we going to be like other countries in the world? Or is there going to be something Jewish about this new state of Israel? And at the time, they worked out a kind of status quo of how people would live together. I'll give you just an example. An example was Shabbat. What kind of a character is Shabbat going to have in this new state of Israel? Of course, the religious said, well, we would like to have no buses, no cars traveling on Shabbat, total day of rest. The secularist said, Shabbat is the one day we have to visit family and see friends. And so if there are no buses, we have to pay more money for a cab. If you don't want to travel, that's fine. But why should we pay more when it's our day to go and see our neighbors, our friends, our family? And so they made a status quo at the time. They worked it out that buses wouldn't travel on Shabbat, but private cars could travel. Neither side was happy about it, but it was a way of living together.
That's what a compromise is, of course.
That's what a compromise is. But through the years, things have changed, and the religious have more seats in the government, and each side tries to push a little more to make it Israel a little more secular, make it a little more religious. And as a result, there have been cultural conflicts that break out periodically. And the question is, how do you deal with this? In other words, we may not agree with each other, but the Geshe line has always been, and the line that I've always believed in, is even if we don't agree with each other on different issues, we should always respect each other and feel as one family. And even in a family, we have differences, but we have to learn how to live with each other.
So we will explore some of the contemporary differences in Israel and what Gesher does with Rabbi Benji Levine, the co-winner of the Kohan Memorial Foundation Award for 2014, when we come back in just a moment here on Too Jewish. We welcome Pam and David of Freedom Smoke. So your product, a smokeless way to get off of tobacco, people don't really understand exactly what's wrong with cigarettes, or they think it's the same thing that's wrong with your product. Can you explain the difference?
That's true, Rabbi Kohan. Part of it is cigarettes themselves, the FDA made them release the ingredients. There's over 3,000 ingredients in cigarettes. There's four ingredients in electronic cigarettes. Propylene glycol, vegetable glycerin, flavorings from Flavor Art in Italy, who is who we use, and nicotine itself. Our nicotine is USP hospital grade. It's the finest that you can purchase. Nicotine in and of itself is not harmful to the human body. That's why we have so many doctors referring patients that they just cannot get to quit smoking cigarettes. They send them to us for a much healthier alternative.
And where do people go and how do they find your stuff?
They can go to one of our three stores here in Tucson. We've got one at Orange Grove and River, one at Broadway and Swan, and one at 12th and Valencia. Or they can go online to freedomsmokeusa.com.
Thanks very much, and we'll talk next week.
Always a pleasure.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, Kvetcher Kfell, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows by streaming them from the website or download us from the Apple iTunes Store's very popular Jewish podcasts. We welcome our Mivina in Israel, Oshrat Barel, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Oshrat.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
And as we say here in America, Happy New Year.
Shana Tova.
It is Shana Tova. Actually, sometimes I play a Shana Tova song, but of course it's not Rosh Hashanah, not the Jewish New Year, but the secular New Year. So do they celebrate the secular New Year in Israel? What do they do? What do they call it?
Actually, you know, by the Jewish tradition, we have four Rosh Hashanah.
And none of them are December 31st.
Yeah, so it's not a big deal to add another one. It's another, you know, another option to have fun, have party. No one knows who is Sylvester, but, you know.
They call it Sylvester because apparently that was the Roman name for this festival, the god of change or... My pagan knowledge is limited. So how do Israelis celebrate Sylvester? They just have a party? What do they do?
Yeah, usually the restaurant will be packed. People will go for a dinner and a movie and a dinner. Some parties, yes. I'm not one of those, so I don't know. I don't have a lot of information about it. I can't remember even what we've done last year here in Tucson for New Year Eve. But yeah, it's another day that everyone, like, you know, it's by the end of the day, we are all working through the Gregorian calendar.
The Gregorian calendar.
Anyway, so it's really, you know, an important day for us.
For Israelis, sure. You know, it's interesting when you think about Jewish calendar is much older than the Gregorian calendar. It's not really 5,700 years old, but still it's a couple of thousand years old. And all the Jewish holidays are calibrated that way. But in truth, for business, for travel, for even academic calendars in general, Israel follows exactly the same calendar they follow in America. There sometimes are bumps in it, but New Year's is still the beginning of 2015.
Yeah.
A little hard to believe.
Yeah, time flies.
Here's the really important question. Does anybody watch American football on January 1st in Israel?
I have no idea. You know that I don't know what's the difference between baseball, football, or basketball, so I'm not the person to ask.
It's not your strain, no. I'm afraid. I promise you, if it was a World Cup soccer match, every Israeli would know about it and be watching it. And I should note that, by the way, the coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers, presumptive favorite for the NBA championship, is David Blatt. Coached the Israeli national team for years. And Maccabi Tel Aviv is very famous in Israel. Nice Jewish boy.
Mm-hmm.
Oshrad, thank you. And again, Happy New Year.
Shana Tova.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
Is your aging loved one unhappy and having a hard time adjusting to life around them? The TMC Gero Psychiatric Center at Handmaker may be able to help. TMC Gero Psych specializes in providing short-term inpatient services for older adults experiencing behavioral health issues. Did you know that most people with depression get better when they seek help? With the right treatment, those with anxiety can overcome and learn to cope with their fears, and individuals with dementia can continue leading quality lives. Our team, led by a geriatric psychiatrist, brings expertise from disciplines across a variety of specialties to ensure your loved one receives the right diagnosis and treatment. For more information about our services, please call 324-4600. The TMC Gero Psychiatric Center at Handmaker. Call 324-4600. Let's talk about how we can help.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
We've been talking about the Jews of France, the long and complicated relationship. By and large, not nearly as bad as it's portrayed today. Let's talk about France after World War II, after it welcomed many of the Holocaust refugees and DP camp survivors. And then Israel was founded in 1948. France was one of the early sponsors of Israel.
Right. It's fair to say that Israel would not have survived this long without active French support in several senses. Political, economic, and especially military. The Israelis won the Six-Day War flying French jets.
Mirage jets, right.
The French were Israel's strongest allies in the Suez conflict in 1956. French engineers and nuclear physicists enabled Israel to build Dimona, its nuclear reactor.
That's when Shimon Peres did all of the, he was fluent in French, did all of the kind of negotiation.
Right.
So Israel,
for better or for
been...
worse, Israel is the only nuclear power in the Middle East. Iran is questionable. And it has been so for a long time.
Yeah, more than 40 years. Well, 40 years.
More than 40 years.
Probably, yeah.
thanks to the French. Eventually, French support for Israel weakened, but it never disappeared completely. It just became less obvious and less dramatic than it was in the 50s and 60s. Israel somehow lost a lot of European support in the years between the Six-Day War and the outbreak of the First Intifada. I would say that that is largely due not to a resurgence of anti-Semitism in Europe, but to a failure of the part of the Israeli government that was responsible for public relations, what the Israelis call hasbara and some people call propaganda, but whatever. The public image of Israel in Europe took a beating in the 1970s, and the beating got worse in the 80s. And the left-wing Europeans who saw Israel as a fellow socialist democracy in the 50s and 60s eventually came to see Israel as a colonial racist state. And for better or for worse, popular forces on the left in Europe undermined what had been systematic support for Israel, both military, economic, social, political, diplomatic, et cetera, et cetera. But the key point here is not even so much that, because that support for the state of Israel, that is nothing really to do with the French attitude toward Jews living in France. Those are really separate issues. And the Jews living in France thrived with no problem through at least the end of the 60s. And then something happened that was fairly dramatic. And I think we should devote next week's session to that something and to the recent past, which has unfairly tarnished the image of France in the eyes of world Jewry, because people stop at the end of the headline and don't read the rest of the story.
Well, we will get to the rest of the story next week. Thanks, Dom.
I look forward to it.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear the old Jewish joke of the week.
Hi, I'm Ben. Attention Arizona taxpayers, you can help provide a Jewish education to families at no cost to you by redirecting your Arizona state tax dollars to JETCO, the Jewish Education Tax Credit Organization. You can help make Jewish education affordable.
Here's how it works. Arizona lets taxpayers receive a dollar-for-dollar tax credit for payments made to JETCO. This lets JETCO give scholarships to kids who attend private schools like Congregation Anshe Israel's Kindergarten and Tucson Hebrew Academy, serving students from K through 8. Tax credits are different from a tax deduction or donation. When you give to JETCO, you get 100% tax credit. That means your Arizona state income taxes are reduced by the exact amount you've given. Supporters of JETCO can give up to $1,053 for a single filer or $2,106 for a married couple filing jointly and get that whole amount back from state income tax.
Give JETCO a call at 647-8442. That's 647-8442. Or you can go to JETCO.org.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
And now it's time for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. A young Jewish man excitedly tells his mom he's fallen in love and he's going to get married. But he says, you know, just for fun, Ma, I'm going to bring over three different women. You try and guess which one I'm going to marry. The mother agrees. The next day, he brings three beautiful women into the house and sits them down on the couch next to each other, and they all chat for a while with his mother. He then says, okay, Ma, guess which one I'm gonna marry. And his mother immediately replies, the redhead in the middle. That's amazing, Ma, the son says. You're right. How did you know? And the mother responds, her I don't like. That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week we complete the story of Joseph and his great father Jacob, now known as Israel, with the final Torah portion in the book of Genesis, Vayechi. It begins with the description of the death of Jacob, and perhaps even more importantly, the final blessings that Jacob gives to his many sons. But one of the most interesting aspects of this section is a brief episode in which Joseph, who knows that his own father is dying, brings his own two sons, Jacob's grandsons, Ephraim and Manasseh, to Jacob for a blessing. In keeping with an ongoing theme in Genesis, Jacob blesses the younger son Ephraim before the older son Manasseh. When Joseph tries to correct his father's mistake, Jacob assures him that this blessing order is intentional. Both boys will father great tribes, but the younger will exceed the older in accomplishment. We still use this same blessing each Friday night when we bless our sons today, both in temple and at home. In the Bible, we always expect the older child to succeed at a greater level than the younger, to receive a certain bonus for being firstborn. But repeatedly throughout Genesis, the younger ends up excelling the older and receiving a greater portion of the inheritance. It's as if there's a clear message here. God has a plan that goes beyond the conventions of human society. As Paul Simon once sang, God only knows, God makes his plan, the information unavailable to the mortal man. For us, this consistent reversal of the traditional roles teaches a different lesson. In the negative formulation, Shakespeare had Caesar say, "The fault, dear Brutus, lies not in our stars, but in ourselves." That is, we can't attribute our own failures to our birth order, or our horoscope, or even our parents. Life happens. But how we respond to it is up to us, not our birth order or some other magical factor. What we can do is control our own actions and our own choices for good. We each have the ability to help shape our own destinies. Like Ephraim, like Joseph himself, like his own father Jacob, we may be born into less favor and fortune than others, but we can make our own way to success and goodness, and to God, if we work and care and seek holiness. When we return in a moment here on Too Jewish, our guest will explain how it's possible to help secular and religious Israelis unite in common cause for the good of everyone. It sounds impossible, but Rabbi Benji Levine explains how it isn't when we return in just a few moments on Too Jewish.
If you like fun and games, you'll love this. And this. And even this. Casino del Sol Resort offers more fun under the sun with the newest slots, the best entertainment, and world-class golf. If you want fun, hit the at Casino del Sol Resort in Tucson. Take I-10 East to I-19 exit Valencia West or visit CasinoDelSolResort.com.
We're out there having fun in that warm Arizona sun.
Enterprise of the Pasquagaki Tribe.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
A campaign against Israeli backpackers has been launched in the Patagonian region of Argentina, where Israelis make up about 10% of the lucrative tourist trade. Posters appeared last week in the city of Bariloche, a major tourism center located in the foothills of the Andes, in which most of the stores have signs in Hebrew to attract Israeli visitors. The new signs call for a boycott against Israeli tourists. Boycott against Israeli military tourism was written on the posters signed by the Palestine Solidarity Committee in Argentine Patagonia. The epithet, Jews out of Patagonia, appeared on two pesos bills, the lowest denomination of Argentinian currency. Following a protest by the local Jewish community, the National Institute Against Discrimination, or INADI, opened an investigation. Its regional delegate, Julio Acavallo, demanded sanctions against the boycotters and called for the posters to be removed. The The Argentinian Jewish political umbrella organization criticized the anti-Israel campaign, expressing satisfaction with the Enadi investigation. We applaud Enadi delegate Acavallo, who is challenging this boycott initiative as a violation of Argentinian law. Our center has expressed its solidarity with the Barilosh Jewish community and offered its support and cooperation against the BDS hate mongers, says Sergio Witter, the Simon Wiesenthal Center's director for Latin America. BDS, of course, means Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions, the growing and difficult movement that works against Israel. Barilosh was a refugee city for Nazis after World War II, by the way. Nazi war criminal Erich Priebke served as the director of the German school of Barilosh for many years. The Wiesenthal Center has exposed the BDS movement as being based on the 1930s racist Nazi Kaufen nicht bei Juden, or Do Not Buy from Jews campaign, said Dr. Shimon Samuels, director of the international relations for the Wiesenthal Center. Adolf Eichmann would laugh to know that in a country whose hospitality he abused, his legacy now discriminates against Israeli teenage backpackers. In other news, 2 days in a row last week, motorists rammed their vehicles into crowds in France shouting Allahu Akbar, Arabic for God is great. 10 people and a driver were injured in Nantes, France, when a man drove his white van into a crowd at a Christmas market. French officials seem to believe it wasn't a terrorist attack. The driver then stabbed himself with a knife as his vehicle plowed forward. The attack in western France occurred one day after a similar incident in Dijon, when a French motorist slammed his car into a crowd, shouting, "This is in the name of the children of Palestine." The same man shouted Allahu Akbar as he drove into a crowd in various locations elsewhere in Dijon. The attack was similar to several committed by Palestinians in the West Bank and Jerusalem in November. A day earlier, a Muslim attacker shouted Allahu Akbar when he stabbed three officers at a police station in central France. Weird, ugly stuff. And in Israel, two Jewish settlers were sentenced to 30 months in prison for setting several Palestinian cars on fire in a West Bank village. The sentence announced last week was the result of a plea bargain with the Lod District Court, which determined that the arson attack about a year ago, November 2013, in the Palestinian village of Farada was a price tag attack. It was the longest sentence meted out to individuals convicted of carrying out price tag attacks against Palestinians. Yehuda Landsberg and Yehuda Savir from the Gilad Farm outpost in the northern West Bank were ordered also to pay more than $3,800 in compensation to the owner of one of the cars. The sentence included a 12-month suspended prison term if they commit a similar crime in the next 3 years. Landsberg and Savir were indicted back in February and confessed to the arson. Price tag refers to the strategy adopted by extremist settlers to exact retribution for Palestinian attacks on Jews.
At the Hanukkah party, I walk through the door. Y'all act like you never seen a dreidel before. You better clear the floor. We about to get raw. I'm about to spin this dreidel till it don't spin no more. I don't wear Hasidic gear, ain't appeared on Jimmy Kimmel. But when I spin the dreidel, I always get Gimmel. I grip the tip and it's about to get spun. A miracle is happening between my index and thumb.
And finally, our toy department reports that a group of adults and children in Tel Aviv, including former Israeli Justice Minister Tzipi Livni, set a world record for dreidel spinning. I guess she had to do something now that she's unemployed. Some 754 dreidels spun simultaneously for 10 seconds on the fifth day of Hanukkah at the Sirona Market Complex. Officials from Guinness World Records monitored the spinning. At least 800 dreidels made the attempt, but not all succeeded in spinning a full 10 seconds. This group broke the record of 734 set by a USY youth group in Philadelphia back in 2011. And that, my friends, is the Two Jewish News of Jews Around the World. We are delighted to welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning. Rabbi Benjamin Levine is the Senior Vice President and Director of Education of the Gesher Foundation, which builds bridges between Israelis of all backgrounds and really Jews of all backgrounds, mostly in Israel, but also around the world. He has been with the organization for 40 years now and has helped to shape the direction towards creating greater connection between Orthodox, secular Jews of every background. congratulations on being a co-winner of the Kohan Memorial Foundation Award for 2014. Tell us a little bit, is this a more challenging environment for secular religious relations in Israel now? I think about, you know, the Yesh Atid party, which ran essentially on a secularist agenda. I see greater advocacy for more changes to allow or more religious parties pushing stronger changes as well. Is this a more tempestuous environment now, or has it always kind of been like this?
I think there have been, throughout the history of the state of Israel, I think there have been times when things have flared up flagrantly, and there are times when things have been, you know, easier, and we've been able to really relate to one another. I'll give you an example of a cultural conflict, one that happened a number of years ago. There was a road in Jerusalem. It's called the Bar Ilan Road. For many years, it was an area that was not overtly religious. There was secular and religious people living in the area. But through the years, the neighborhood has changed, and it's become more and more religious through the years. Well, as it became more and more religious, the religious who want to go to shul on Shabbat have to cross over a big road, the Bar Ilan Road. And as the neighborhoods have changed demographically, and more religious Jews have been living in the area, are now living in the area, they wanted to close one of the main roads on Shabbat so that when people would cross over, there wouldn't be a problem. Now, there is another way to exit Jerusalem other than the Bar Ilan Road. The problem is that if you use the other road, other than the Bar Ilan Road, it takes a little bit longer. We're not talking about a lot longer, we're talking about 5-10 minutes longer. If there would have been a mutual respect for one another, they would have found a way to work it out. In America, I grew up as a young boy in America, even though my family are originally from Jerusalem. But in America, I remember my father had a synagogue in New Jersey. Not far away was a church. And when the church needed extra parking, when the synagogue needed, whatever it was always a way to work it out with each other because of the mutual respect. What happens in Israel is that it became political. And the question was, why should you close this road because there are religious people living there and make people have to travel 5 or 10 minutes longer to get out of Jerusalem? The mayor then of Jerusalem said, look, if there would have been no other way to get out, then I would have said you can't close the road. And the mayor at the time, who was not a religious man, said, but because there is another way to exit Jerusalem, the city, takes a few minutes longer, I felt that we could close the road out of respect to the people who are now living in the neighborhood. I was approached after it became a real conflict, and every Shabbat there were people standing there from both sides. Politicians all got involved in it. And they said to me, you know, you're a person who works in Geshe for many years, and you try to find a way to find answers to conflicts. What would you do in a situation like this? So I said, I wouldn't have let it become a religious conflict. They said to me, what do you mean? I said, once a thing becomes a religious conflict and all the political parties get involved, it's a very, very difficult thing to diffuse. I said, what I would have done is, before it became a religious conflict, I would have had City Hall put in a few red lights on the Bar Ilan Road to make it a little longer and take another 5 minutes to get out of that road. If that would have happened, then people would have said, why should I go on the Bar Ilan Road? It takes a little longer. I'll take the other road. And then, without even getting into religious conflict, you would have solved the problem. Once it becomes a religious conflict, it's very, very difficult to stop it at the moment until something else comes along, which is what usually happens. All these conflicts usually die out after a while because other conflicts come up, and that never ceases to be. But I think what you have to do is you have to use a little seichel, You have to use a little creativity and diffuse things so that it doesn't enter and that the politics doesn't get involved in it and make it into a conflict. It's not an easy thing, but I really believe, I mean, I grew up in America, and I saw how you can respect one another, live next door to one another, and each one helps the other if you want to solve the problem. But it takes both sides. One of the things I've learned throughout the years in Gesher, working throughout the country, is that both sides have to want to solve it, and both sides have to want to find a way to live together in peace.
Tell us.
I believe it's possible.
You know, and it probably shouldn't have to wait for the Messiah. You meet regularly with groups of people, and the Gesher. Explain a little bit about the Gesher methodology. How you guys do what you do.
Well, when Gesher started as a young organization, the idea was to have seminars, to have a retreat, and bring out religious and secular kids from different schools, and spend 4 or 5 days together, like in what we used to call a Camp David situation. And so religious kids who come from a religious school, they came with their stereotypes that all the secularists don't know anything about religion, just want to live a life of enjoyment and have no, and don't care of any values or whatever. This was the stereotypes that they had. The secular had stereotypes of the religious that they want to close down the state and they want to take over everything and make our lives a misery. And what was fascinating for me for many years running these seminars is that when the kids met with one another, the antagonism was so strong about each one, fed very much by the media because they had never met people from the other side. They knew what the other side thought of them. And after spending a couple of days together, studying sources from the Bible and secular sources together, and sitting together in mixed groups of religious and secular, they found after a couple of days that though we have things that we may never agree on, there are many things that we do have in common living in Israel and wanting to continue to live in Israel. And instead of accentuating always the negative, why not find the positive things that give us a chance to work it out and live together without bothering each other, but respecting each other? In the seminar, there were all kinds of games that opened up even the question of what is Jewish identity, of where do I fit in? Do I see myself as Israeli? Do I see myself as Jewish? Do I see myself as a secular person with like an American living in America? Or does it mean much more to me living in Israel as a Jew? And what does that mean? How does the history affect me? And what is religious coercion? Do I want to coerce somebody else? Or is there something that we should all have in connection, being Jews living together in Israel? And then there were discussions. There were people who came in to speak from different sides. There were games that were played during the time, and the idea was to try to break down the feelings or the stereotypes that kids came into the seminars with. And to me, what was the most beautiful part of it, and the reason I think I stayed so many years with the seminars, running the seminars, was that after a few days spending Shabbat together, it was a totally different atmosphere. And for the first time, many of the young people became friendly with one another, and they realized that, you know, we have differences of opinion, but we do have things in common. And to me, that was what I wanted to dedicate my life to more than anything else.
So I've heard, I do want to put you on the spot, actually.
Go ahead.
I've heard you do a wonderful job of presenting different typical characters in Israeli society. And I've heard your Eged bus driver, which is I think it's still a valid type in Israeli society, is legendary. Could you give us a little example of some of the ways?
Well, this was the show that I did called The Four Faces of Israel. I started in one of the early days of a seminar, and I wanted to show the kids that were there different stereotypes. And when you want to show different stereotypes, you take each stereotype and you kind of you take it to the end. So the show was a very funny show where I played four different types of people. The first one, I would come out dressed as an ultra-religious man living in Me'er Shearim, the ultra-religious area. And he was living more in the old world, in the world of the ghetto, in the world of his little shtetl. And there was a lot of humor, but each character in turn would raise serious questions about how he related to Israel and how he related to the Jewish people. The Egged bus driver became legendary, as you say, because I came in as the old type of Egged bus driver, very macho, with the open shirt, with the sandals, with the short pants, and he was very crass, but there was something very nice about him, and he didn't have much knowledge about his Jewish identity, but he had fought in the war. He had a very, very strong Israeli identity, and he would. There would be a give and take. In other words, there was a moderator would ask questions, and then the people in the audience were allowed to ask questions of the character. The third character was a Frenchman, an artist from France, living in Tzfat, married to a non-Jewish woman, and he was more the stereotype of the universal person who religion played no part in his life. Even he had just come to Israel. It just wound up that way. He found that in Israel, in Tzfat, in the mountains, he had a lot of his creativity. The juices opened up, and he started to paint like he never painted before. But there was really no connection to the place, and he was a cosmopolitan who could have lived anywhere else, an intellectual who wound up in Tzfat. And then there was the American, Harry Abelson from Los Angeles, who gave a lot of money to Israel every year, but lived in Los Angeles and visited Israel maybe hundreds of times. And each character was very, very funny. There were a lot of jokes in it. But through the jokes, we were able to get to very serious issues, which afterwards the audience would have to discuss amongst themselves as well. And it was a show that I started. I didn't have any idea at the time where it would go. It was just for the seminars, but it became a cultural show throughout Israel. And then I was invited throughout the world to do it. For many, many years I did the show, and it raised a lot of serious questions about where do I fit in with my own Jewish identity? What does it mean to me? How do I relate to people who are different than I am? And because it was so humorous and funny, you were able to get to very serious issues and take out like the things that didn't allow you to listen to another person. And it worked, wonderfully. I mean, in the army in Israel, they took me out of my army duty and said to me, "Would you do this show every few weeks for officers training?" And for many, many years, my miluim, my reserve duty in the Israeli army, was doing this show for many, many different groups of officers training.
Well, it's a great way to show people that their own foibles are what they have to overcome, not necessarily other people's, and a great way to build those bridges that Gesher is focused on doing for so long and that you have done so very well. I want to thank Rabbi Benji Levine for a great visit here on Too Jewish. You can hear his acceptance at the Kohan Memorial Foundation Awards ceremony. And I want to wish him continued success and continuing to work to build these bridges between Jews. Thank you so much, Rabbi Levine.
Thank you so much, and God bless you.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's musical guest and get a final musical playout.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday at 9 o'clock. Our guest will be our second 2014 Kohan Foundation Award winner for Jewish Unity, Jonathan Ornstein, the executive director of the Krakow Jewish Community Center in Poland. Our playout this morning comes from cantor David Dudu Fischer, the great Israeli cantor and musical star. His tune for the new year, this time a secular one, Shana Tova. Have a good new year. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week, good secular new year. Please drive safely, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Shana Tova, Shana Tova, Ba'anava Rabba Hine Kreva, Tavislicha, Gam Ahava, Tavi. Gam shalva yamim holchim yamim bayim silchi gam at lachataim rab icholim simchi noflim bechesedot.